You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to Trek FM's local watering hole, the 602 Club. I'm so excited to be here. Of course, you know who I am. My name is Matthew Rushing. And here now, pretty much every time with me, as I could pretty much say always now, is the one and only Christy Morris. And I got to say, Christy, you look so much better than you did last week.
Oh, thanks. Well, how bad was it last week?
Michael's just not the same.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, I tried to be him, or he tried to be me, I mean, and it didn't work out as well. But no. Yeah, I'm glad to be back, I'll talk about Spider-Verse anytime offline if anybody wants to. I thought it was awesome as well, so glad that you guys got to go over that.
It was really fun, and what's funny, too, and I'll just kind of tell people the story, but the reason that Michael was on instead of you is because Michael and Aaron and I had talked about having them on before you and I had the conversation about you coming on as the co-host. And mm-hmm. So that's how that happened. And you luckily and thankfully and very graciously gave up your seat so that your husband could come on. And I know he appreciated it.
And he's also a lifetime Spider-Man expert, so you were in good hands.
That is true. That is true. I mean, it was like Allstate, you know? It was fantastic. So,
yeah.
Really excited, though, because, well, we've been on the same network for years now, and I would say that our time streams have never crossed. I feel as almost as like we're from alternate universe. I'm from maybe Earth, you know, Prime, and he's from Earth One, but finally we've crossed over. It's happened. Zach Moore is here.
How's it going, guys? I've earned my stripes. I'm in the 602 Club. It's nice in here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, I mean, you got the free coupon, right? So you get a free drink for whatever it is that you want from behind the bar.
Oh, great! I did. I wasn't sure what this applied to. I was going to try to get a cookie or a dessert of some kind, but I'll take a White Russian if you guys got it back there.
Yeah, so we can make that happen. Well, tonight we're gonna, you know, wrap up the, I don't even know what the trilogy is called, but the M. Night Shyamalan superhero trilogy. We're gonna wrap that up with Glass tonight, and so hopefully lots of Glass puns you'll hear. So yeah, anyway,
we're gonna shatter your expectations tonight, guys.
Yes, exactly.
Oh.
We are just gonna anyway, we could go on for hours with Glass puns.
And it's the East Rail 177 trilogy.
Oh, is that what it is?
Wow.
Oh, I like
that's
that.
That's a deep cut. Well done.
Fun fact.
Yeah, nice job. Christy, were you thinking about that all week?
Yes.
Okay, because that was really good. I really like that.
I was waiting.
Actually, probably the most apt name for this trilogy. They should put that on like the triple box set that they'll bring out.
So. I didn't come up with that, by the way. That was from Shyamalan.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Oh, well, there you go. Well, I mean,
I can't take the credit.
I'm sitting here thinking you're brilliant, and you should have just let us have
thank
it.
You.
You know. Well, I'm excited to do this. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts here on the 602 Club. iTunes. Apple Podcasts, whatever they're calling it these days, you know, hit us up with a written review and a star rating. Help people find the show that way. Also, you can find us anywhere else, you know, Google Play, Stitcher. I mean, we're on Spotify. We're pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts, any podcatcher out there. Just type in the 602 Club. Make sure you subscribe. You can find us on Twitter, Trek FM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We've got the listeners only discussion group on Facebook. Just type Babel into the search field, or if you're on the website at trek.fm, you can hit discussion on any of the menu bars, and that will let you into that group as well. And then you can talk to fans from all over the world, listeners from all over the world, talking about everything we're talking about here on Trek FM. And then last but not least, if you'd like to send Christy and I an email, go to trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and then that email comes to Christy and I, and we can converse with you that way. As we break a little glass here, I wanted to kind of see where everybody was coming into this one. And specifically, Zach, you know, Christy and I talked about Split just a couple weeks ago. So our thoughts on that and Unbreakable are out there. I was really interested to see where you were coming from. Like, was this a series that you've been following, you really liked, you were really excited about? What did you think?
Well, I've been a fan of Unbreakable since it came out. I remember seeing that in theaters for the first time, and it was a real, I mean, remember, this came out in 2000, so it was before superheroes were back in the big screen. This is pre-Spider-Man, pre-X-Men, you know, so it was a fresh new take on superheroes, like, in the real world. And again, this is at the height of Shyamalan, so he kind of taken everybody by surprise. He was the hot young director. So, I loved Unbreakable. I thought it was a really cool twist on, like, I understood what they were trying to do. You know, a twist, and I use that word way too much talking about Shyamalan, but a take on the superhero genre as if they were in the real world. And, you know, it came and went, and there was always talk of, like, he had always said, oh, I'm thinking about doing a 2 and 3, right? And you thought to yourself, that would be cool. But then he kind of made some more movies that weren't as good over the years, and then that kind of faded away. And then Split kind of came out of nowhere. And, of course, you know, I was very happy I was not spoiled for Split. So when I saw it, I'd heard there was going to be like some kind of reveal at the end. I was like, oh, it must be that the Beast is real or something. I don't know. So that kind of came and went. I wasn't thinking about it. And then you had that little tag at the end where it's like, they called him Mr. Glass. It's like, oh my God, it's Bruce Willis for Unbreakable. So I was very excited. But I thought Split, like, you could have, Split was great because it would have been a great standalone movie if you didn't even have that tag at the end of it. It had just been Split. And there was no post-credit scene with, you know, David Dunn. It would have been a great movie, but that just kind of escalated the excitement afterward. Like, Shyamalan is back, Unbreakable is back, Bruce Willis is back in this role, Samuel Jackson wasn't far behind. So I really loved both those films, and I was very, very excited for Glass because, I mean, this is how you do an unexpected cinematic universe. Like, that's so cool because in this day and age where we know, you know, in the 24/7 entertainment news cycle, you know everything that's coming all the time. You know all the Marvel movies that are coming, DC, etc. And then to have them sneak this one in under you, that just ratchets up the excitement. So I was very excited for Glass.
Yeah, I think I like what you're saying there because, you know, I'm even thinking of the fact that we kind of know movies that are already in the works that are coming out, you know, after Endgame. And so we have some thought process of, you know, like, who's coming back? Like, we all know. I mean, you know, Spider-Man's not going to stay dead.
I hope Spider-Man's okay.
Yeah. Black Panther's not going to stay dead. You know, so, like, there is this sense of kind of over-planning it to the point where we all know it as the general public, too, or a lot of people in the general public, not the entire, you know, general public, because there are people who don't pay attention to this stuff like we do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there is that sense where you kind of know it's coming, and it is kind of nice to have a series that feels slightly more organic to just the thought process of, oh, okay, this could work, this could fit in, this could become something more, rather than, you know, I feel like, you know, the monster universe that they're going to do.
Oh, the dark universe?
Yeah,
oh,
with the mummy. And they're like, they're talking about how great it's going to be. And they're planning things out for the next 10 years or whatever.
They're taking group photos already. Yeah, it's like, slow down, guys.
Yeah, and then the movie sucks and you don't want it. So, yeah, this is definitely, I think this is a better way to go about it. And so I was at least, you know, regardless of whether I loved Split, coming into this, I was still very much intrigued because of the fact that, okay, now we're going to really put all this together. How is that going to play out?
Yeah, that's how I felt as well. That's what I was looking forward most to about Glass, was how they were going to possibly put together the completely different stories of Unbreakable and Split. Because, I mean, it, like you said, Zach, Split could stand on its own and doesn't depend on any other story to weave in with it. And that's why, you know, like we said on the last episode, Matt, I'm glad that Shyamalan saw that he couldn't fit Kevin into Unbreakable because it was too unbalanced. Because Kevin is such a strong character and you need a lot of time to develop with him, it would have overshadowed everything else in Unbreakable and been more about Kevin anyway. So I think that although it was unintentional and ended up being great for Shyamalan to have it in three separate movies. And I think that it was definitely the biggest thing I was looking forward to see. Obviously, we knew David was going to have some kind of connection to Kevin, but we didn't know how the things were going to be combined or resolved.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's just kind of talking about this idea of, like, bringing it all together. I feel like this movie kind of revolves around the trio of those characters of, you know, Kevin Wendell Crumb and David Dunn and Elijah Pierce. Like, they're the nucleus of this movie. And I kind of wanted to I feel like it would probably be a good idea to break them all down and what we thought of their parts in the film. And so with Kevin, or the Horde, however you want to refer to him, either one, how do you feel like this movie dealt with him as a character and, of course, kind of integrating him in with the other two?
So I think, honestly, he was the standout character of this movie. I think that even though Elijah ended up being the mastermind behind the twists, that first of all, James McAvoy being able to play all of these completely separate personalities is a feat in its own, because I would not be that good at that many different personas in the way that they dress, move, speak, everything.
Etc.
Yeah. Hedwig was my favorite. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, yeah, he's my favorite, too.
Yeah, not Patricia.
Step away from the controls, dear. No, I agree with you. I love McAvoy. Like he alone is worth the price of admission in both these movies. You know, because it could be, you know, could be the risk is it's like, okay, that was the gimmick of the last movie. It's like, is it going to get old in this one? But no, it's just as delightful to see all these characters again. We see some new characters. You know, little bits and pieces of them we see, you know, obviously the big ones like Patricia and Hedwig and Dennis. And you know, in this one, we actually get to see more of Kevin, right? Because we just saw him for like a couple of minutes in the last film. And it was nice to see him kind of break through in that thing. And you know, not to jump ahead, but like to see him, you know, embrace the light and take over his own personality at the end. I mean, that's his own conversation, wherever you want to see the beast go and all that kind of stuff. Because when you end Split with the Beast, you're like, where do you go from there? And I felt like this movie did a good job of not like taking that back away, but still spreading around the personalities enough in this movie.
Yeah, I thought too, the smart thing was is them allowing us to see some of the other personalities we didn't really see in Split. So, you know, getting to see the Irish girl twins, you know, and I don't feel like we really saw Norma or Luke before. Mr. Pritchard, who's the professor of Japanese cinema, you know, I thought that was
that was great,
really interesting. You know, so I thought that, I mean, and that was the kind of the thing when you gave him 23 different personalities, we only saw so many in the first movie, so you allowed him to be able to explore some of the others, and it made sense too because they keep flashing him. I felt like, what is this, you know, Men in Black, you know, where they keep doing the flashy thingy,
the memory wipe.
And but you said something, Christy, that I think was really smart, in the sense that, you know, when we had talked about Split, they could not have put this character in Unbreakable because he would have overtaken the movie. And I would say, as much as I love James McAvoy's character and the way that he plays the character with all the different personalities, I do think that he overshadows everybody else in the movie. And so it takes away from the rest of the trio, personally. As I was watching the film, I didn't feel like I was as completely connected with especially David as I should have been, because McAvoy gets so much more screen time, and he's just what he's doing is so much more magnetic.
Well, I think it makes sense though that they took that approach, because it's like you're making a sequel to both these movies. Split came out 2 years ago. It's fresh in everybody's mind, and McAvoy was like the breakout performance and character. To me, it makes sense that this is more of a sequel to Split than to Unbreakable. But you're right though. I mean, of the three characters, you know, once Mr. Glass kind of comes out of his coma, if he ever really was in one, he really does, you know, make his presence known, but David does get kind of lost in the shuffle, And you want you want to know more about his situation. And it's kind of like a mini prologue almost before the story starts. And he gets locked up, and then he really has not much to do until the end, and then it's over, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm glad he had those 20 years of adventures between the movies, but I do wish we would have seen more of David. I totally get what you're saying.
I absolutely agree.
It feels like a little bit with David, it's like he gets locked up, and now he's just in a glass cage of emotion. Like, I never get to see him. Like, I don't really get to feel... I think you rightly pointed out, Zach, that there is that history of like 20 years where he's been being a superhero, basically. And we don't really get, we get a little bit of a sense of what he and his son have been doing. But it just, it's, there's just not as much there. And I think this part of that is one of the things that I kind of have an issue with the movie, which is I don't feel like it structurally is able to find a way to bring all of these things together that makes it feel as cohesive as it needs to be. And part of that is trying to juggle these three main characters plus all of the other stuff going on, because it's not just their stories, but I mean, we've got a lot of other people trying to work their way into the movie as characters.
I think that was the main weakness of this movie as well, that there was too much to juggle for trying to tell one cohesive story. And so then it ended up feeling a little weaker of an experience than I would have liked. But I still think that there were a lot of good things about it, and definitely the twists in the end that I wasn't expecting. So I still think of it as a great movie, but... I think that maybe they should have simplified the number of new characters and really focused more on the trio and had given David more to do, because, I mean, it wasn't unless they explained later in the dialogue what happened with his wife that you really figure that out, because just the scene of them in the kitchen doesn't really make sense. You're like, did she just
weird
leave
stunt
him?
Double. You're like, what is
yeah.
this?
Yeah. This is not Robin Wright.
I understand why they just kind of brushed over because David's thing, because what has he been doing? It's like we've all seen all the superhero shows, all the superhero movies. He's got a guy in the chair, his son on the computer, doing the guy, the earpiece for him. He's going around being a superhero. Like, I don't know what more of that we could have really seen, because what I thought was really smart about this movie is, like, after Split, you're like, oh my God, we're going to get to see the Beast fight Unbreakable, right? And it's a great mm-hmm. match, because they complement each other so well with their powers. But we get that immediately. Like, 15 minutes in, we get yeah. their first little confrontation. And then we get past that. We're not waiting. They don't build up the whole movie to it or something. They give us a taste of what we want. Then they lock them all up in the jail. And then we have a really cool... I liked what they were trying to do. Obviously, there were twists and turns. But they kind of... Where they sit down and they psychoanalyze each of these guys. And so, like, do you really think you're a superhero? Do you really think this? Do you really think that? And then you're, as the audience, you're thinking, well, they're making some good points. Because, you know, this is still... At the very end, right, we get the twist of, oh, it is a comic book world after all. But at this point, you're like, well, this is the real world. If this is the real world, maybe these people are just, you know, we've seen some crazy stuff, but they really, especially with when they start talking about the Beast, where you know, or, you know, whatever, right, whatever personality you want to say, like watching the rock climber and all these kinds of things, like they really address a lot of issues. Like, it's like talking to Scully on the X-Files about something and like having all these overly scientific, you're like, wow, I want to believe, but you're making some great points. So I liked they went that approach. I understand why maybe that's not what people expected or wanted, but I think it's like the perfect way, especially the way this trilogy has been going. You know, it's hard, like we were saying, it's hard to find an identity of what this trilogy is. But to me, that's a natural way to get these three characters together and follow the story. Because what is it without that? Like, oh, they're going to be fighting in the streets and beating each other up. And as we've seen in their confrontations, they really, it's a stalemate between the two of them, right? Because one is super strong, but one is also super strong. And mm-hmm. there's really no clear victor. So that would get boring, you know, if they were just them fighting the whole movie. So I like the kind of unexpected turn they took with the story.
I agree. And I think that it was brilliant too in that moment. Maybe that's the theme of, you know, the whole thing that the psychiatrist was saying to them. Is it all in your head? Is anything that you believe that you're capable of just in your head and not actually true? You know, it's kind of a sad theme, I guess, but it it's a nice way to turn everything on its head and see that, you know, it could possibly brainwash people into thinking that they're not really super. And I mean, you saw even Kevin start to doubt, or Patricia rather. And really it took Mr. Glass having to build him back up to believe in himself and the beast again.
Yeah. Even David's son, right? Like he's at the YMCA or something. I don't know where he is, but he sees those guys like working out and he's like, man, those guys are pretty strong. Just like my dad, maybe the doctor, maybe there's something to what they said. So even the characters and you as the viewers have, there's some seeds of doubt planted, and that makes it more interesting. That would have been like, okay guys, here's three supervillains and superheroes. Let's see where they go. Like that adds another layer of the story, which really elevates what would have been more simple and boring, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Cause you know, the Unbreakable really is a classic origin story comic book superhero movie. You know, when you look at it, it has all the hallmarks of that and all the cliches of that. But the way that it's done, it tricks you into not realizing that until you get to the end and you're like, oh, that's what we were doing the whole time. And, you know, this movie was interesting because the way that they deal with the doctor, as I put her in air quotes, you know, Sarah Paulson's character, she kind of felt like the way in which we have had a lot of movies kind of try to deconstruct, you know, comic book movies. But at the end, you really get the sense like she is the world in which superheroes wouldn't want to exist, because where humanity won't accept them. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's the Batman v Superman thing with Superman. You know, will people accept him or will they reject him? You know, and here we see that she and her group, we don't even know what they're called, but they are
the Cloverfield group.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, right.
And they look like they've got the, you know, the green clover tattoo on their arm.
The leprechauns.
There you go. There it is. They're going to do a new film series, Leprechaun. But you have them, and they have been dedicated for thousands of years of taking out these people and making sure that they either kind of follow this programming of realizing you're not super, even though you are, and or they just take them out. To keep the playing field level, which I thought was definitely interesting. It was a fascinating way to go to basically have they're not really necessarily an evil group, but they're not a good group. I mean, maybe they're like morally neutral, possibly.
They're Section 31.
Yeah, they are basically Section 31.
Ooh, or I just had an epiphany. What if the theme to all of these together is that point of nobody can be special because that's not fair?
Ooh.
I just came to that conclusion because that's a good point. I mean, that basically it's that whole viewpoint of we give out awards for participation to everybody now rather than awarding people for excelling at something. So basically they're saying that their natural gifts are not real and that everyone needs to be on the level playing field.
That is just throwing that out there. Really interesting. I like that, actually. I think you have a really good point. To say that we just live in a world that wouldn't accept exceptional beings because that's not fair, because I can't be exceptional too the same way that you're exceptional. Like, we can't, you know, it almost feels like, and Incredibles does that a little bit too, you know, with like, well, you know, if everybody's special, then nobody's special.
No one is.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, that's a really good thematic element that I had not seen before, and I feel like that definitely changes things a little bit for me, that thought process, that this whole thing is about keeping a quote-unquote level playing field to make life fair when life isn't fair. So we are literally willing to either brainwash people into thinking they're not special, or we're going to kill them. But either way, they're not allowed to exist because they might make somebody feel bad about themselves. And that was... So about her and her group, I want to ask you guys, because I thought it was really interesting that we get there, but I also didn't feel like we knew enough about why they were doing what they were doing to make it really punch home.
Yeah, it did feel like a little... When you first saw like the Beast get shot, or Kevin get shot, and you pull back and see that gun with a tattoo, I'm like, all right, this is something now. I don't know what it is. We've taken some twist, some turn, and right. they reveal a little bit, you know, but they never really... We have that one meeting that she's in, right? A flashback when David holds her hand, and then another meeting later. But you're right. I wish, like... I know they were trying to, you know, Shyamalan style, right? Oh, we got another twist for you. But had they started to establish that a little earlier in the movie and kind of slowly build up to it, it did feel a little tacked on, and I felt like, I don't know. It doesn't, like, ruin the movie for me or anything, but I felt like it could have been better established. And like we're all saying, maybe this movie could have been longer. You know, had it been long, like, mm-hmm. maybe, I don't know, I don't want another three-hour movie or whatever, but maybe an extra 20, 30 minutes, you could have more David Dunn, you could have more of this organization, and things have felt more balanced. Because by the time you're even up to speed on what was really going on the whole movie, it's over. It does work for me because Mr. Glass kind of turned their plan on itself with the cameras and all that. Like, that mm-hmm. kind of made the whole thing work for me. Had that not happened at the end, I would have felt really unfulfilled and disappointed by that revelation. But because it all kind of comes back to bite them in the end, that works for me.
Yeah, and I like that you don't expect anything with her originally until that reveal of the tattoos. But I do agree that I wish they had fleshed that out a little bit more about, you know, maybe saying other people that they've taken out before or brainwashed into thinking
they're
that
they're
going to
tie in even more movies we didn't know were connected. You could have pictures of characters from all kinds of stuff. Nothing's coming to mind right now, but
well, they'd have to make them up, right? Because these weren't actual comic book characters,
right?
Well, and something that, you know, they've been tying around this whole, I mean, and obviously it came in Unbreakable, where Elijah tells David that he believes that comic books are people's recollection of things that have actually happened. You know, and in this movie, we got Casey back, and she's at the comic book store, and she challenges Dr. Staple by saying, you know, when Superman came out, he couldn't actually fly. He could just jump really high. And so there's this idea of us talking about the fact that, you know, as they've gone on, we've mythologized superheroes more and gave them more superpowers and all of these things, but that the original kind of thing that they were based off of was something that was in reality, you know? And so this is the thing, when we came down to that point where we got to the reveal about Dr. Staple and her Section 31 Cloverfield group, I felt like this movie has a lot of good ideas, but the execution to bring those ideas together into a cohesive whole doesn't hold as much. It's a leaky boat. What I'm trying to say is that when I left the theater, I didn't feel fulfilled, as if there was a completed idea that I came away with. There's a lot of interesting things, but it didn't feel like a cohesive whole.
I felt the same.
Yeah, I guess I would have felt the same. Like I said, I feel like the Rorschach's journal ending of it all, right, with Mr. Glass, like that's what made me think of the ending with Watchmen, right, where it's like all this crazy stuff has happened, but no one's going to know the truth, but Rorschach dropped that journal off, and now who knows what's going to happen, right? That's that ending of Mr. Glass revealing everything that happened to the world. That kind of made it work for me, although you're right, it didn't really necessarily, emotionally, I felt fulfilled because of that, right? Because the mastermind, right, he's always one step ahead, and but you're right, it didn't necessarily tie together all the loose ends of the story. I don't know, like I would say, like as a whole, like we're saying, like Unbreakable works complete start to finish, Split works complete start to finish, this, I guess, kind of works, but not as well, because there's a lot of concepts here that aren't that aren't followed up and capped off. Because at least in the other two movies, although there was more potential for future stuff, everything felt kind of capped off. You know, like even, for example, you know, you brought up Casey. I, when they announced they were going to have, you know, Split 2 or Unbreakable 3, whatever you want to call it, at the time they said she was coming back. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't expect to see her again. And I almost, you know, I almost kind of liked where they left her in that moment in the car. We're like, oh, your uncle's here to get you. And there's that moment, and the cop looks at her, and she looks at the cop, and you're like, what's she going to do? Because mm-hmm. you kind of put yourself in that place. You're like, oh, what is she going to do? What would I do in that situation? You know, and it leaves you there. And that kind of that's the kind of stuff that, like, when you go home and talk to people about the movie, like, oh, man, what about this whole thing? So that would have worked. If we never saw her again, I actually would have been fine with that. But they did bring her back in this one, and that is good to know. Like, as soon as they said her foster family, and she's at this other place with these kids, I'm like, oh, thank God she got out of that. Mm-hmm. And she reveals to Kevin, you know, that's why she feels this connection. She's like, because of her experience with the Beast and all that, she was able to empower herself and get out of that situation. And she never would have broken that cycle if not for her experiences in Split. So to me, those little things were fulfilling. So on a micro level, you know, like Mr. Glass, like he knows he wasn't a mistake and he was right and he beat the bad guys. Like that stuff is fulfilling. But overall, like I wasn't really looking for a theme throughout all three, I guess, the way you guys might be. So I actually, you know, I really love this movie. I feel like I liked it more than y'all. it worked for me. I didn't know I wanted this kind of movie to be the follow up to the last two, but once I got it, I was like, you know what? That's exactly what I needed.
I like you bringing up Casey because I thought it was very interesting to have her back as a character, and I thought she actually had one of the strongest storylines in the sense that she is a character who's been through horrendous things, and she went through a very trying and awful experience with Kevin, and yet she doesn't blame Kevin for what he did to her. In fact, she feels sorry for him and empathy towards him, and she wants to help him. In the end, I thought that was actually a really strong thing, that it's her experience that allows her to want to reach out to him and try and give him what he's never had before, which is the compassion that he needs to move past the need for these different personalities, especially the ones like the Beast. And especially even, I even liked that her interaction with him leads Dennis to being like, I never wanted this to happen. I only came about because I wanted to help Kevin. It turned into other things. And I thought that was a really strong thing because the small thematic element getting from Casey was that we need to have compassion for those who can't necessarily help themselves, and remind ourselves that awful things happen to a lot of people. And we need to put ourselves in other people's shoes and try to help them through that. And I thought that was a really beautiful thing to see her come into this movie, to not be blaming the person who put her through hell and actually trying to, you know, I don't turn the other cheek, basically, and help him in a way that nobody has tried to help him before. And I thought that was... I mean, that's why I really appreciated her having back in this movie, because I thought like she added a lot to the story that they were telling with Kevin. And it really, that brought that part of the trilogy, I felt like, to a nice conclusion at the end. You know, Kevin may die at the end, but Kevin dies as Kevin, not anybody else. And to be able to go into eternity as himself, and not some alter ego that got created, I thought was a really strong point for this movie. And the fact that it's Casey who helps him get there when she's the last person that you would ever think would actually want to do that. That's a really beautiful sentiment.
And that's what's so nice to this, really such an emotional piece of this movie, is that she sees that at his core, he's a child of abuse, just like her. And that she can maybe bring the real Kevin back out and help the rest of the world see the good in him and that you shouldn't see him as a villain, that he developed all of this just to protect himself. And that's really ultimately what he's still doing, even though, you know, the murders and things are happening. He thinks that he is doing the right thing. And that's the sad part too, that he kind of shares that with Mr. Glass, is that he thinks he's doing the right thing in trying to find himself by finding the other superheroes in the world by killing people. And it, you know, it's sad when you see his mom talking to the psychiatrist and saying, I don't condone what he did, but he's trying to find himself. And aren't we all just trying to do that? So I see her point, but you're also like, yeah, but he killed so many people trying to find himself.
there are lots of little kernels of dialogue in there like that, you know?
Right.
They kind of just hang out there, and they don't necessarily like follow him up or but you know, I'm cool with them just hanging out there. I am. So
yeah. Like what you said earlier, well, this has always been an origin story.
Yeah.
It's a good job.
Well, and there's a real sense too, you know, by bringing, you know, Elijah's mother back. I think that Miss Price was an interesting character to have back because she is somebody who accepts her son for who he is, no matter what that is, and definitely gives him unconditional love, even though he's a mass murderer. Right. You know, and gives him the acceptance that he's been trying to find himself, which is very interesting. And that's what makes it a little bit messy. It's like, oh, it's great that he's trying to find himself, but he's also killing hundreds and hundreds of people in the process. You know, we call that, you know, a serial killer. He just does it, you know, a lot at a time. And so there's this real sense of unease for me then at the end of the movie where we kind of end with, you know, Joseph and Miss Price and Casey sitting there, and they're united in releasing this footage to the world, and yet I can't figure out what they're trying to say by that, because this will lead to obviously other people like experiencing their own sense of like superheroism, you know, and bringing out those talents and gifts in them. And, you know, your theme earlier is that we can't have, this is why we can't have nice things, you know, we got to keep everybody in a box, you know, everybody has to be the same. But there's this other side of me, it's like, are we really trying to say throughout the end of this movie that we should all just live out our full potential regardless of whether it's good or evil? I don't know. And so it really leaves me at a conundrum of how I feel about the end of the movie when, you know, one of the major characters, you know, Elijah, we just don't ever really call him evil in the movie. We just kind of...
Well, Matthew, who decides who's good and who's bad, okay?
Well, I think that if you caused the derailment of a train that kills hundreds of people, and you've done that a few times in other places, I feel like that's pretty evil.
Right.
No, I know you're kidding.
Yeah, it is hard to make him an anti-hero. Like, the shades of gray are kind of gone as far as he's concerned. You know, but you do feel sorry for him. You know, especially after all the horrible things, even at the end when he falls out of his wheelchair, right, and he breaks his legs again, and the beast crushes his shoulder, like, oh, you know, you feel that. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, and just like as a production thing, right, I thought it was genius to use a deleted scene from Unbreakable, where he's the little kid at the amusement park, where he's getting all thrown around.
Oh, yeah.
In the thing, like that's great because it's the same actress that plays his mom. It was something that was gonna be in Unbreakable, but it wasn't. I'm like, that is just really smart, you know. And that creates a little bit of sympathy for him and adds some context. Is this something like for the Unbreakable characters? There wasn't a lot of context as much there was for Kevin, obviously. So I don't know. I don't think it's cheating. I think it's smart to just pull back scenes either that were or weren't in the movie of Unbreakable and put him in here to kind of make you feel sorry for little Mr. Glass, you know? Doesn't justify anything, but you at least feel some empathy for him.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that every time they've shown him in Unbreakable and in this movie having a moment where he's injured, it hurts me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize until Unbreakable that, what is it called? Osteogenesis imperfecta is a real disease. So, I mean, that sounds terrible to me. I do still feel bad for him. So you're right. And I also think it was smart for him to bring back deleted scenes from a previous movie, because otherwise that footage just goes unused, or it's special features anyway. So why not?
But even though the guards, right, they were going to drop like a, like it was terrible, right? When he was like, I'm going to drop this.
Oh, the flashlight on his knee.
Don't do it. You son of a, don't do it. You know, they still didn't deserve to die, but still. That makes you more okay breath. With the fact that the Beast kills them later.
Yes. Right.
Well, and that was an really interesting moment, too, because you feel like that guard is somebody that is just evil. And yet what he's trying to do is trying to figure out, and he's never actually going to drop it on his legs. He's just trying to see if he's actually there. And, of course, Mr. Glass is too smart for him to show that he's aware of anything happening. In fact, he's willing to basically have his legs broken, possibly, to not, you know, be proven to be astute of what's going on around him, to not be drugged. And yeah, it is really fascinating to me, because the idea of superheroism and, you know, holding people back from, you know, being exceptional, and the idea of, you know, what we will accept in society from exceptional people and the behavior that we would accept from them is really fascinating. And it was something that I wish that the movie had delved into more, because, you know, Unbreakable gives us, I think, a very nice kind of like very black and white understanding of things. You know, Split breaks that wide open and pours all of these shades of gray onto things, in a sense that it almost makes it just opaque. Like, I don't know what, I mean, there's no color, you know, there's no black or white in this, that sense. And this movie, I feel like, it does much the same thing, and I struggle back and forth with what it is that I kind of like would, I don't know. I don't know what I come away with. And I guess for this type of movie, that bothers me just a little bit, that I can't figure out what it's trying to get across. I would like to feel like I kind of understood it more. And I'd have to say, we didn't talk about them in the support characters, but I don't know about you guys, but I really feel like David's son, Joseph, just gets the complete shaft in this movie. Like, he's got nothing by the end of this movie, and I really felt badly for him. I mean, I guess maybe you get the slight sense that he and Casey might end up together one day. You know, there's like a little recognition, like, hey.
Yeah, I thought they might do that, because they have that really weird shot of like when Casey goes to the principal's office and is like, look, his son went to the same school. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
what is that
and
for?
And your point.
Right? Yeah. So you're right, though. I love they brought back the original actor. Again, these are little things they didn't have to do, but they did. And that just ties it all together. And it's great. Yeah. It's great to see that kid again. I haven't seen him since, you know, Unbreakable and Gladiator. I'm sure he's done stuff in between. But you're right. It starts out where he's like, oh, him and his dad are doing the father-son sidekick thing. And then once David gets put away, like, they put away, you know, Joseph's storyline too, it seems. So, and then even at the end, right, Mr. Glass gets to be with his mom, right, when he dies, and then Casey gets to be with the Kevin, but Joseph is not going to be with his dad when he just gets, you know, drowned to death in a puddle, right? If there's one thing I had a problem with, it was the way David did. Like, I wouldn't mind the way he died, that he died. I minded the way that he died, not that he died. That his son wasn't there, and he was face down in a puddle. Like, that was questionable.
Yeah, I think that it kind of doesn't do him justice after all that he's been through, and, you know, the heroic nature of his character and Unbreakable and everything. Then to have him go like that, it feels like mean-spirited. Like, the other two got like these heroic deaths even, and he gets drowned in a pothole.
Yeah, the villains get to be surrounded by loved ones, right? So yeah. I don't know. Is it trying to say something with that? Is the one hero gets the worst death? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
The point is, life's not fair. That's what he wants you to take away from this.
Life's not fair, and no one can have superpowers.
Sometimes you drown in a pothole. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Life comes at you fast.
I absolutely agree with you, because I felt like, you know, Joseph and again, David kind of get the short end of the stick in this movie just by the storytelling of it. And I absolutely was frustrated by the fact that, you know, I guess, part of the problem is, I think, this. Shyamalan's trying to have comic book-ness, but then not have the full-on comic book-ness. Because he's like, oh, you know, because Mr. Glass keeps saying, oh, but this isn't a comic book, even though it is a comic book, right? And so it's just frustrating because it's like, it's trying to walk this line between comic book and real life. And it's like, you either need to embrace the comic booky nature of it, or you just need to embrace the real life nature of it. And I don't think he straddles it well enough, because especially with David, it's like, I'm watching the movie and I'm expecting David to overcome his greatest obstacle. You know?
Yes, right. Absolutely. The whole movie, I was waiting for that, because they make such a big deal about the psychology and like, oh, it's all in your head. I'm like, oh, I know what's going to happen, right? It's going to be water, but he's going to find a way to overcome it, and that's going to save the day. And I don't, maybe that's too cliche. Maybe that's why he didn't do it, but absolutely, Matt. I was waiting the whole movie for that to happen as well.
Hey, you know how he overcomes it, Zach? He learns how to swim.
Well, and even not a moment like where I wanted him to be able, when he's getting his face shoved into the puddle, you know, and she comes over, you know, that he's able to knock the guy off. And at least, like you were saying, Christy, like, have a moment with his son. The guy's about to die. And it just felt like we're doing it to do it because it's against convention. You know, we're going against the comic book convention now. But it didn't feel like it necessarily served the character very well. And in the end, I just felt like David Dunn feels like a underutilized, underserved character by the story that we get. Whereas, you know, Mr. Glass and Kevin, I feel like we get a real good sense of a good ending for them, because they do need to die, right? I mean, they're both very, regardless of it not being Kevin's fault that all these things have happened, he's caused a super amount of evil in his life. And so, and he recognizes that, Kevin recognizes that, which I thought was kind of beautiful in the end. But David is just a guy who's been trying to do the right thing his whole life and totally get shafted. And is that the other theme of this movie? Like, yeah, you're going to try and be a good guy, but it's going to suck in the end.
Right?
Well, like, I mean, the movie is called Glass. So I get why, you know, like, this was his movie. Because, you know, Bruce Willis had Unbreakable. That was his movie, straight up. Kevin had Split, straight up. Kevin wasn't in Unbreakable. And Mr. Glass and the Overseer weren't in Split. So I get it, and that, but I'm right there with y'all mentally. But to me, I guess it doesn't really bother me, because like, he had his moment in the sun, you know, and now this is Mr. Glass's movie and his story. He kind of takes over at the end. Although I would have wished just one little shot with him and his son, him and Joseph, would have gone a long way to kind of smoothen that over at the end, I think.
Yeah, but it was great though that Joseph at least got that moment of the big reveal. I like that he was the one that tells Kevin what happened.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, they're all fighting and everything, and basically Kevin thinks that he and Mr. Glass are fighting for the same team, and then learns that from Joseph and completely changes.
Now, did that bother y'all, like universe shrinking? Because to me, it didn't. To me, it was like, oh, it's all connected. That's what these movies are about.
Yeah,
like,
no, I loved that.
Right? I thought it was great. And then I know, like, I don't know if I read this online or whatever, right? But back, like, when Split happened and it was tied to Unbreakable, and there was a deal with, like, oh, the Beast had to go to the train yard because his dad never came back. Maybe that was the train that David was on in Unbreakable. And that was always kind of in the back of my head. This is what I get for reading too much stuff online. It's all these fan theories and comments. But then I was like, good, perfect. Like, I'm sure a lot of people didn't like that because it was universe shrinking. But I thought, in the context of what these movies are, that enriched it, much like it for you, Christy.
Yeah, I think I think that helps. I didn't have a problem with that, because honestly, I felt like it brought the three characters together in a way that you weren't necessarily expecting. But that it made it feel like, okay, yes, we have all three of these, and they do kind of create a, you know, loose trilogy together. And the fact that then it would make sense for Mr. Glass to be so interested in Kevin, because he feels like he's responsible for Kevin as well. It just took longer for Kevin to, you know, maturate 19 years. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that part actually really works. On top of that, I wanted... bringing this together as a trilogy, you know, kind of just thinking about it as that, how do you feel like this worked as an end for the, you know, the train trilogy?
Well, for me, I compare it to Watchmen. I do, because Watchmen was like a deconstruction of superheroes, and a lot of your heroes have a bad end in that story, you know, and that's pretty much what happens here as well, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, the truth will have its day, right? And the truth is revealed to the world through Mr. Glass thinking it all through. So to me, I it is a very fitting in, because I was thinking, like, again, the movie subverts your expectation. That's like a hot topic phrase these days, right? But you think, oh, here's the tower, and they're gonna go fight in front of the world. And it's so comic book movie, right? He's like, we'll finish this in front of the world, right? The Beast says, and they're gonna go run and finish their fight on the tower or whatever. And you're like, okay, I guess they're gonna do that, but they don't do any of that. And I felt like had they gone that way, it would have been inappropriate for this trilogy, like the universe, this series it's set up, for it to turn into a generic superhero movie to close it all out, would have undercut and done a disservice to the kind of storytelling the last two films were. So I thought, even though it might have been a lot of people were expecting, I thought it was a perfect end to the story and the approach and the deconstruction of comic book heroes that Shyamalan was going for with this trilogy. And it, despite some nitpicks here and there about the way certain things happen, ultimately it did work for me.
I like your viewpoint on it, and maybe made me feel a little more positively about it than I did coming into our discussion about it. I do think, in a sad way, of course, it had to come to an end, and I didn't want it to, and maybe that's what I struggle with. Because I had such high hopes for it, starting out with Unbreakable, and that one I actually had seen back in the theater in 2000 when it came out, and I still remember it being so shocking and different. And I think that this ending, like I said, kind of had to happen, because where are they going to go from there? But it still made me sad that all three of our, you know, key characters had to die. And so I guess that was what bothered me the most, other than feeling like he was Shyamalan maybe trying to throw too many things into one story, and then they're all conflicting with each other, to where all three of us are struggling to figure out what theme you could take away from this or from the three as a whole. But it does, like you're saying, Zach, nicely cap off at least where the other two had left off. And I did want to see how they were going to combine those two into one universe, because they were so different. You know, one is about a guy with DID, and another is like a classic superhero story. So you're going, well, one is really grounded and one is really otherworldly. How would those have anything in common? But I mean, they found a way. And I think tying together that with the train scenes from the original movie made it even better, rather than it just being a world shrinking, like you said, that it gives more gravity to what's going on. So I still liked it for the most part, felt like it fit, but was still a little disappointed in the way things were executed.
You know, it's funny, Zach, you said Watchmen, and it blew my mind, because I hadn't thought about that until you said it. And the moment you said that, I was like, oh, that's why I don't love this movie. Is because I've already seen it done, but way better. In Zack Snyder's director's cut of Watchmen, which is fantastic, and just the fact of reading Watchmen the comic, and it's like, yeah, we've seen this story. So I think you saying that made me realize how unoriginal this really is. And that bothers me big time, because it's like, no, this, he had it so, he was able to find the originality in Unbreakable. He was able to continue that on and Split and do something that just totally off the wall and different. And then he ends with this, which is not original. It's just not. You know, bringing it all together, he just used somebody else's ending, which was way better. Yeah, so as an end to the trilogy, I think it's, to me, the more and this is the other thing, I was thinking about this, I've been trying to find some semblance of what I thought about this film, and I realized this, I really haven't thought about this movie since I saw it, And that's the that's a bad thing. If I'm not thinking about a movie a lot after I've seen it, that's a problem. Whereas, strangely enough, I went and saw The Kid Who Would Be King, and I hadn't stopped thinking about it for all night and today, which totally unexpected, you know. So to me, that's like to have this as the end of the trilogy was a letdown, because I just, you know, I came away from Unbreakable with such a high. Like, it's such a good movie, and especially rewatching it, how it holds up. I don't love Split, but I really appreciate the acting and what he's trying to do there and how interesting it is. And, you know, it's just not a movie I would love to watch a lot just because of the subject matter of abuse and all that stuff. But this one, I'm like, okay, it's there. You know, I feel like, I don't know. Yeah. It just kind of feels like cracked glass.
Let me ask both of you guys this. You know, for Unbreakable, like, one of the things to me, which was always like a missing piece of Unbreakable, and as we came to learn, it was going to be part of the movie, but Shyamalan didn't include it, was like a true like opponent, right, for David Dunn, like a physical opponent, right? Because if Mr. Glass is like the Lex Luthor and Bruce Willis is the Superman, David Dunn, then, you know, the Beast is like a Doomsday or a Zod or something, you know, to speak in comic book terms, right? So I feel like, you know, if that, not that it, like, you know, not that I felt like, oh, it would have been so much better if he had a big fight with somebody, because that's not what Unbreakable was about. But, you know, it kind of did fulfill that need or something, that, like, when you set up the super powerful character in the first movie, you want to see him fight somebody on his level, so to speak. And if there was one missing piece of Unbreakable, you know, I feel like this answered that for me anyway. So I was satisfied, because I was very excited. I really love both those movies, and I had high expectations for this movie, and it met those expectations. Because high expectations are a two-edged sword, right? It's like, oh my God, I'm going to love it no matter what. And you do, or, you know, and I don't think that's what I'm doing. But the other one is, oh my God, I'm so excited. And they're like, oh, that's not the movie I had in my head, and I didn't like it. So there's so much of that going on in fandom, right? But I don't know. To me, it filled in some missing pieces from the other two movies that I would have wanted to see, and tied it in a bow for me.
Well, that's a great segue into what do we want to rate this? Where do you guys come down on Glass?
I'd like to hear what Zach says.
You know, I would rank this 23 out of 24 DID personalities. I really did.
Oh, nice.
Love this movie. Like I said earlier, I didn't know what I wanted from this sequel, because this is such an unprecedented trilogy, right? There's no like blueprint for how something like this is going to go with these two radically different movies, and he put these characters together, and of the two, you know, I understand why it's more of a split sequel than an Unbreakable sequel. So intellectually, I'm like, that's why it doesn't get the full 24, doesn't get the Beast, but it gets all the other personalities for me, right? If I'm for rating wise, because, it really did something smart. Like I really did like how it took this left turn. I'm like, we're all going to sit down in this institution and we're going to psychoanalyze all you. And if you really think you're superheroes or not, like literally do that on screen. And like all these stories, like you said, Matt, it is Watchmen-esque but they're all remixes of each other. You know, so I don't necessarily mind that per se. And I really could, you know, I couldn't think, other than like maybe a better ending for David and his son, because, you know, they're the true heroes of it all. And Casey, you know, that's the thing I would change. But really, I can't think in my head of like something else I would have liked better than this ending. So to me, it feels like a perfect ending to what had been set up in the last two movies.
I agree with that for sure. As far as wanting a better ending for David and his son. And I was definitely the one, though, that came into it really pumped and wanting to see what they were going to do, and then did feel a little bit of a letdown. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I think that the things I would have done better if I had been making this movie was that. And then also, maybe I wouldn't have had this watchdog group with the clover tattoos, and maybe left it more to the psychiatrist is on her own mission to figure out if these people are really super or not and prove them wrong, for her own reasons. And I felt like it too was not overall having a strong theme, like we all were saying, as far as what the moral of the story is or anything, if there even is one. But it felt a little like at the end of the day, because they all die and everything, that the story is life is not fair and that's it. and it's over. So I came out of it a little bit sad, but I still liked most of it. I'd say 75%, and didn't see the twists coming at all. So I thought that really redeemed a lot for me. So I feel like for me, I'll do out of 10, probably like a 6 out of 10. So I still give it fairly high, but take off a little bit for those things that I would have changed.
If I could just interject with one thing you brought up, yeah. Christy, because there was that, you know, watchdog group, right? I feel like you could have taken that out, like you said, just the doctor on her own. But for the victory at the end for Mr. Glass to have outthought this centuries old, millennia old organization, right? That's what makes his victory so powerful to me, because if it were just one crazy doctor, it's like, I proved her wrong. It's like, okay, that's cool, I guess. But he, you know, big deal. But he outsmarted, like, you know, he was able to expose this millennia old organization, this Illuminati-esque organization, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, that makes the ending work better, because you guys were saying, we all were saying, you're like, what's going to happen with these videos being released? I think that's the point. This one guy with, you know, with his dreams could undercut these guys, and they all didn't die in vain, because they kind of did, but that's what does it for me. That kind of justifies the random dark organization they threw in at the last minute.
I do like that point though, that it doesn't take muscle; it could just take your mind to take down something that big. That's a good point.
I think for me, I come down to this being 3 out of 5 focusing lenses.
The other two are crack.
I also thought of that.
And crack like glass.
It's just what we said before. I think this movie had a lot of interesting ideas, but I don't think that it was able to pull them together in a way that it was as cohesive as I would have liked. And I think that's the frustrating part. And I think, you know, honestly, I think that's actually one of Shyamalan's problems, is he always has grandiose ideas. He has delusions of grandeur, but he can't necessarily bring the grandeur to life the way that it needs to be brought to life. Sometimes he can, and I think he did that with, say, like Unbreakable. I just don't feel like he's able to completely bring that here. And part of that, you know, as we mentioned, you know, kind of having this Section Clover 1 group, I feel like, which I realize Section 31 could actually just be the clover, because it's in a 3-leaf clover. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, so having that there without it being kind of fully invested in what that is, it feels like, it kind of felt like more like an afterthought than it was like, oh, I need something for, like you were saying, Zach, I need Mr. Glass to get his, you know, one up of something. But it doesn't feel, I don't feel as fulfilled by it, because I only have a vague understanding of what it is. So yeah, I mean, again, it's a movie that just, it has some good stuff in it, but especially as bringing the trilogy home, I didn't come out of the theater feeling like, oh my gosh, that was a great end. Whereas, you know, I think like The Dark Knight Rises, I came out and be like, I love this movie, it's the best ever, you know. So, and that's kind of what you want when you come to the end of the trilogy, you know. Even if I don't absolutely 100% love the, you know, Return of the Jedi, I still felt that feeling of like being fulfilled at the end of it. So, yeah, maybe this movie just needs more Ewoks. So,
that's the answer.
It's always the answer.
Just throw in some Ewoks. That'll save the day.
Exactly. Well, Zach, thank you, you know, so much for joining us here on the 602 Club. And since it's your first time, and as we give everyone the opportunity, man, let everybody know where they can find you if they have never heard you before for some reason. If they haven't, I don't know why. And where they can catch up with you online.
Well, great. Well, first of all, guys, thanks for having me on. This is a lot of fun. Hopefully this coupon I have gets me in again at some point.
Of course.
every 6 months or so I can swing in here. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun to talk about some non-Star Trek stuff on the Star Trek Network we're all part of, which you can find me every week talking the original series, Captain Kirk, all things in the Enterprise, old and new, on our original series show, Standard Orbit, which drops here on Trek FM. I'm a host there with Ken Tripp and Haley Stoddard. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Well in the Smallville, where we talk about that young Superman show from the 2000s.
Somebody save me!
There you go. There it is.
Tom Welling.
Yes, we talk about every episode of Smallville. We're doing that over there. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S, because when I made that Twitter handle, there was a character limit. So
there still is. So now we could not get all of aggressive negotiations in either. So yeah.
So for that very reason, on Facebook, email, and Twitter, it's Always Smallville with one S for that very reason. So thanks, Twitter. And then finally, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I talk about Star Trek, superheroes, baseball, all kinds of stuff. So look forward to talking to you on Twitter over there.
Of course, Christy. It's great to have you back. You know, Michael was nice, but he's no Christy. So,
thank you.
Everybody where they can catch up with you if they want to talk about Glass or anything else that we've been doing in the 602 Club recently.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter if you want to talk through any of the movies we've been talking about, as well as the previous James Bond movies Matt and John and I went through, and Mission Impossible. I'll be on Twitter and Instagram at BespinBell, and also sometimes appear on the Star Wars Report as well. But you can mostly find me here now every week, unless we have a special, extra special guest. And then I might let them take my seat. Not to say Zach's not extra special.
I was like, well, I guess I wasn't special enough. That's fine.
No. Ouch. You got the number one seat, and we are secondary to you.
There we go. I'm in the light now.
Ooh, the light, like the Young Justice light.
Ooh, man, he's gotten into that lately.
I'm a little bit worried. Good. Yeah. Okay. I could go down a whole road since I've been getting to that show, but you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Tumblr under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing the Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast with Chris Jones. We have dropped a new episode there, so make sure you check that out. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network, talking about a few different things. One is Harry Potter, each and every week with Drea Kaufman on Owl Post. We're walking through this series one chapter at a time. You can also find me on the aforementioned Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. And then last but not least, we're back for the new year. My co-host Courtney and I talking about films through the lens of faith on cinema stories. But thank you so much for joining us. And as always, y'all come back now, you hear? ¶¶